Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Arseblog 20 podcast series, in which we celebrate 20 years of Arseblog by talking to a guest about a calendar year of the site's existence between 2002 and 2022. We have reached the momentous year of 2014, the end of the trophy drought, and much more. With me to talk all about it is Tayo Papula. Hi, Tayo.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for having me along as ever.
Yeah, my pleasure. So 2014, this was a successful year in some ways. There was a very significant moment in that regard when it came to trophies, which have been in short supply. But where do you want to start this year?
I want to start it with probably one of the most Arsenal signings of the time. I want to start with Kim Kjellström. And like when we spoke about this and you gave me the opportunity to choose a year, 2014 was a good one, as you say, because we got our trophies, you know, we got a trophy, we ended the drought, as it were. Mm-hmm. But I was just thinking and looking back, and I just really enjoyed the kind of Kim Kjellström cameo, if you will. The fact that he turned up in January, mm-hmm. He turned up and with a broken back, injured in the game on a beach. He says he fell on a pebble. And just before the transfer had been agreed, he'd had a lot of interest in him. The transfer had been agreed and he fell on a pebble just having a training game. The kind of thing that probably wouldn't happen now. They get put in cotton wool straight away, don't they? So that would never have happened. And so he turned up for Arsenal and didn't play for ages. But what it was, the reason why I wanted to start with him is that there was an amazing, at the time, there was an amazing kind of, in his own words, well, he actually, the translation of it was put on the Arsenal website and is still there if anyone wants to go back and have a look at it. But he just speaks so beautifully about like the kind of cameo that he played for Arsenal, which of course we'll come on to later on. But at the time, I just remember it was right in the middle of just, you know, no one takes the piss out of Arsenal better than Arsenal fans. And it was, and at the time, it just felt like the most Arsenal thing ever. This guy turned up. We needed arguably some reinforcements after having had such a great start to the season. And we turned up with a player who didn't play for us for three months. But then, of course, when he did, then he made a telling contribution.
Yeah.
So that just seemed like a really, really good way to start off 2014.
Yeah, why not? We were all desperate for something to happen in that transfer window. And I think they discovered the back injury while he was doing his medical. And he, you know, reckoned, well, that's it. They're going to send me off again. And Arsene Wenger said, no, we've done all the stuff. We want to keep him.
Yeah, there was something from that interview which I mentioned, and I pulled it out. It made me laugh again, and you'll see why. He says, "I was surrounded by Santi Cazorla, Mesut Ozil. These guys were so skillful. It was nice to see them every day at work. People here are so professional. I played alongside Zlatan Ibrahimovic for a long time, and he's a real pro. But then I came here and I saw how professional Mikel Arteta is." Wow.
Okay.
He's so committed to the game and so engaged with it as well. I just learned a lot from watching him. And Mikel Arteta features quite heavily in our 2014. And in all the kind of footage that I was having a look at to go back over it again, it hasn't changed. The seriously intense stare, the way he stares at the ball when he's about to take it for free, when he's about to take a free kick, just the intensity about everything, the intensity like of his disappointment when he scores an own goal against his former club Everton later on in the season. Just everything with an intensity, which we've now got really, really used to. But I guess at the time he was surrounded with so many sort of dazzling, more interesting, dare I say, players that it didn't come out. But like looking back with hindsight now, our manager, he was really, really serious.
Yes, I think he always was. I mean, all the players, when you talk about them, or when they talk about him, there's always this like super professional guy and everything else. So it should be no surprise that's carried on. Do you reckon Mikel Arteta, if you know he decided to do a January transfer, found the guy, got like a fractured back, do you think he would go ahead with the deal, or is that like, yep, oh, sorry, look out the door, away with you?
Look, we've got people we've got very able internationals who aren't getting a look in for the bench. I don't think the guy with a broken back would have stood much a chance in the Arteta regime. But
yeah,
but there you go.
There you go. Okay, where are we going next? I mean, there's probably one landmark that we have to get out of the way, and we should get out of the way quite quickly. That in 2014, Arsene Wenger's 1,000th game took place.
Yeah, not much of. There were some tricky moments looking back on this. I remember exactly where I was, and this was on the back of the whole specialist in failure comment that Mourinho had thrown at Wenger. I think, and it came about in an odd way, and it was one of those things which maybe it might have been lost in translation, or another one of those kind of times when you remember when Arsene Wenger used to do these press conferences all the time, and he was just too honest for his own good.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And you knew what he was saying. Obviously, now the fourth place is a trophy; it's now become part of the English lexicon, as it were, basically the football lexicon. But he was saying that teams were being scared, are scared to fail, and of course Mourinho turned that round because, you know, he was the bully at the back of the classroom, sniping at the benign guy who tends not to rise to it. Although on this occasion, I think he called him a disgrace to Chelsea at this time. But so when all of that happens, what you don't want to happen is to have your ass handed to you in the way that we did that day. And it was horrific. And it was, I don't know if it was the start of these 12 o'clock absolute kickings that we kept getting from the top teams, but it was definitely just completely odd, because it wasn't even like we've had kickings since, and we've been a much worse team and almost kind of deserve, you know, we've gone up there expecting it. But I think, as I remember at the time, I think the shock of that was astonishing. And of all the people for it to happen to, the occasion, it was just a horrendous day. But it was kind of, we'll come to later on in the season, obviously, where that confidence got knocked and stayed knocked. It was out of the blue, but it was also not completely unexpected with the Arsenal that we'd come to expect under Arsene Wenger. Brilliant and tragic at the same time. It was just horrendous that it was to Mourinho, the worst of all people.
Yeah, and of course it was the infamous Kieran Gibbs red card for the Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain handball. Andre Mariner was the referee that day, and he sent off completely the wrong guy.
I mean, obviously you can imagine how much fun we had with that, because, you know, they all look the same, right? But it was... it wasn't his finest moment, and I guess VAR would have dealt with that now.
Yeah. If there's one upside to VAR, it would be that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain would have been sent off that day rather than Kieran Gibbs.
Not that it made any difference at that point. But and of course, it came on the back of a month previously where we'd had this kind of shooing against Liverpool. And I mentioned earlier, this is the Arsenal team that could be on a brilliant unbeaten run, on a brilliant run after 22 games at the top of the league, get absolutely totaled at Anfield at lunchtime. And something that we got to very used to with Arsene Wenger teams, unfortunately, was that confidence knock carries on into, we saw it in 2008 with that, with the Almost team after William Gallas and Birmingham, and how the four draws that followed that. The Liverpool defeat absolutely put us into a tailspin, which was kind of top and tailed by this. Actually, it wasn't even top and tailed by the Chelsea game, because we then got spanked by Everton a couple of weeks later. But that was a real kind of hallmark of this team, really. Like, absolutely brilliant, but ever so fragile.
Yeah, I mean, that Liverpool game, when you concede two goals to Martin Skrtel, you've got to ask questions of yourself, don't you?
It was in this period as well that, and we'll get onto some nicer stuff in a minute, why don't we? But it was in this period as well where Stoke marked themselves as the kind of people who boo the sick, as we say, who they cheered. I think it was a Jonathan Walters goal, which kind of put us to the sword up there. But it was marked by the fact that they were cheering, even though 4 years had passed, they were still cheering and booing Ramsey, I should say. But that was a hell of a period after what had been a sort of really promising start to the year, and it ended up costing us.
We should move on to talk about some nicer stuff, because there was a Champions League with Bayern Munich, but I don't think anybody needs to relive another Champions League exit to Bayern Munich. But the FA Cup, and I think in the mists of time, people think that the 2014 FA Cup was quite favourable, quite nice to Arsenal, because we had Wigan in the semi-final, we had Hull in the final. But when you look at the run that we had to get to that point, I know there was a game against Coventry, but we beat Tottenham 2-0.
This is where it gets fantastic. We beat Tottenham 2-0. We beat Liverpool 2-1. We beat Everton 4-1 before we get to the fun bit. But I mean, let's stop and enjoy that Spurs moment, shall we?
That was a great Rosicki goal, wasn't it? Where he robbed it on the halfway.
He robs Danny Rose and pushes it in front of him all the way. Keeps pushing it, and then just lifts it gloriously over. I'm surprised it was Lloris. Lloris has been rubbish for them for ages.
Consistently shied in goal for 15 years now or something.
Yeah, it was fantastic to see. But it was also a great... I think that was the birth of unlucky Theo, because it was late on in the game where obviously he got his injury, which I'll come to, but he had so many chances in that game beforehand. It was almost funny. It was great to see as well Gnabry on the pitch for that game, which I'd completely forgotten about as well. But around that time, like Rizicki, Cazorla, the Ox, Arteta, Ozil, Sanogo. I mean, this has been a real joy doing this and finding and like just picking out. Remembering how much I super enjoyed that team. But against Liverpool, I think Liverpool was the birth of what I call the Sanogo chaos theory.
Expand on that theory.
Just sent in to cause absolute havoc by and making good things happen, even though he had no intention of that thing happening on purpose. It's like two parts. One of my favorite players ever, Paolo Onechop. Like two parts Paolo Onechop, one part Kaba Diawara, a couple of parts like a Lukaku kind of like bulldozer rhino kind of thing. And he just put himself about, and by accident he has an assist for Oxlade-Chamberlain in that game. There's a bit of a juggle before he puts it back to I think Rosicki, who then plays in kind of who squares it up for Podolski, a really kind of messy goal that kind of deals with Liverpool. Much to enjoy with that, and we see that chaos theory in full effect by the time we get to that epic semi-final.
Well, yeah, and I think he started that game because there was some scandal with Giroud. I can't quite remember, but Giroud had been dropped or was on the bench, and Sanogo started that game against Liverpool, which, you know, when you're 9 years without a trophy, That's a brave decision. It is a brave decision. You know, whatever Arsene Wenger saw in Yaya Sanogo, I don't think we ever really got to see what he saw. But maybe that was Arsene's gift, you know, that none of us could actually see some of the things that he saw in players. You know, to start Sanogo in an FA Cup game against Liverpool, knowing realistically it's your only chance of a trophy, you know, there's a bravery to that, I think.
I think so. And I really enjoyed the kind of vindication of it, because there was a lot, there was uproar in the stand that day when, because he brings off Podolski, not Yaya Sanogo, for example, when people with and looks, he had a one-on-one which he kind of fluffed, but then he made a great chance for Gibbs. He sort of struggles out another chance eventually which goes to Oxlade-Chamberlain, which then ends up in the back of the net through Mertesacker. Mertesacker had a busy game that day, didn't he? Gave away the penalty and then pops up in the end. So, yeah, I, you know, there was a few of those. Many of them didn't work. Arguably, Sanogo didn't work. But the fact that there are these cameos, we started off talking about this Kim Kjellstrøm cameo, and the fact that Sanogo played his part in us getting to the final. And I'm all for fun things like that, like especially in retrospect. Ask me at the time, ask me at the time how I felt about a centre forward who couldn't control his limbs, then I might have given you a different answer. Yeah. But with the benefit of hindsight, a bit kinder.
Time is a great healer.
I kind of enjoyed it.
I mean, do you remember, just to set the scene for that semi-final then against Wigan, we're 1-0 down. There's about 7 or 8 minutes to go. It doesn't look like we're going to get a goal. You don't know where a goal is going to come from. There's some pressure and everything else. And I remember sitting in my chair doing the live blog for this one and thinking, you know, if we don't get a goal, this is basically the end of Arsene Wenger. I mean, I could not see any way that failing to win a really... not an easy semi-final, but certainly a semi-final that you as Arsenal Football Club should win, to go another season without a trophy. I mean, how do you, even with Arsene's incredible staying power, how do you stay? How can you stay? Should, you know, would he stay himself? Yeah. Would he think this is the right time to go? And then I think it was an Oxlade-Chamberlain shot. Per Mertesacker stuck the ball in the back of the net. And then we had extra time. And then we had penalties, and this is the moment where Kim Kjellstrøm described it as the greatest 15 minutes of my life, when he talked about going up and stepping up to take a penalty for Arsenal in that semi-final. 82,000 people in the stands. He says they are loud and starving fans that hunger for a title. They haven't won anything for 9 years, which is an eternity for a club that is considered one of the greatest in the world. By strange and unexpected detours, I've ended up at Arsenal in North London. With straight legs, I bend down and put the ball on the spot. We know what happened next, but I mean, it is, as you say, it comes full circle to this mad decision to sign a player with a broken back who a couple of months later uses his experience and quality to score a penalty, a crucial penalty in a shootout, which sends you through to the FA Cup final.
Right. I mean, it's a word that's not really part of my language, but I think this is probably the period where the idea of Arsenal being the banter club kind of took hold. Like, all these things are so kind of peak Arsenal. A guy with a broken back scores, gets right to help us get to Wembley. As I said about Sanogo, who, and you're right, it is an ox chance that sort of breaks for Mertesacker, but it's after a mad juggle from Sanogo, who is kind of struggling with the ball himself and a defender, and it falls to Oxlade-Chamberlain. This is brilliant, and I think you are right about the being at the end for Arsene at that time, because as you pointed out earlier on, you know, to get here, we've dealt with Spurs, we've dealt with Liverpool, we've dealt with Everton. No, we're not going to fall to Wigan in the same.
Like that, surely
this is about the it's about the most Arsenal thing possible. And at the time, which I hadn't realised until I was just looking back at the, like, we'd lost our previous two Wembley appearances, so it really was a big moment for the club and for the fans to go and have a big day out there.
Yeah.
And we were 7 minutes away from blowing it. A word for Fabianski, it's brilliant doing this in hindsight, because we've seen the, you know, we've seen the keeper that Arsene Wenger thought he was going to be. Now, because he's had, a, you know, he's gone on to have a brilliant career, and we'll come back to him later on in the year. But he had a great shootout as well.
Yeah.
To help us get to the final as well. So and then we get to the final. A great day. You came over for it, didn't you?
Having
just sort of forgotten how we'd been so starved of it, like how we got so used to it in the, you know, in the back to back appearances in Cardiff and so on. It was such a good day for the club. Everyone was in such a good mood beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And then these two, I think Curtis Davis and is it Alex Bruce? Who
was it? Alex Bruce might have been.
It's Curtis Davis, and I think it's Alex Bruce, puts Hull 2-0 up. And I remember Keith, who I sit with and who I do up a podcast with.
James Chester, whoever he is. Sorry, James, I don't really know you.
James Chester. Well, if it'd been the winning goal, then we'd probably remembered it straight off, but it was just buried in the end. It was, yeah, I remember Keith just kind of crying on my shoulder going, this club, just doing it to me after all these years of waiting. and seconds later, and he was doing it when they were preparing the wall for Cazorla's fantastic free kick.
Unbelievable free kick. But we could have been 3-0 down. If you remember, Kieran Gibbs cleared off the line when we were 2-0. Like at 2-0, it's tough. 3-0... I mean, I think that's pretty much game over. And I remember sitting in the stands myself and thinking, what the fuck is happening here? You know, this is not that it's going to be easy. It shouldn't be easy. It's a cup final. Anything can happen in cup football. But to be 2-0 down in 8 minutes, you know, when so much was resting on this and so much was riding on it, and there were so many emotions from fans across the world, not just the fans in the stadium. We'd been waiting for so long for a trophy, and it looked like, oh my God, we're gonna blow it. But like you say, Santi Cazorla produced an incredible free kick to make it 2-1. I think 20 minutes in thereabouts. So there was only a 10-minute period when Hull had a 2-goal lead, and I think that goal at that time really played a part in what happened next. Obviously, it played a part, but I think had Hull hung on to that 2-goal lead for a bit longer, we might have started to get a bit antsy.
And just before we do move on, can I just have like a word on Cazorla, who is my player of this period? When I, like, you know, looking over it, this is, I think, after the more obvious kind of Arsenal heroes, certainly of the, you know, the era that we grew up with, you know, from the, you know, the 98 team or the Invincible team, or even, you know, Wrighty, Merson, all of that. For the modern Arsenal hero, I absolutely adored Cazorla, and he was electric around this time. Without his injury issues, you know, the way that he combined with everyone, like, you know, the way he combined with Ramsey, the way he combined with Ozil, the way he took the ball off the back four, the way he combined, I should mention, because at this time, because we get a lot of joy out of Riziki this year. And it's just a really lovely time for these Arsenal players who have gone again in the image of what Arsene Wenger wanted. You know, that, you know, when we flipped from our kind of, you know, our 6-foot invincibles, and, you know, Cesc's moved on by there, and he's really found a gem in Cazorla. And Cazorla you don't really think of him. You think of him as being, you know, a laughing luxury player who did lovely things, but he dragged us back into that final.
Yeah.
He dragged us back into that final, and the free kick was the kind of culmination of that. As did Aaron Ramsey, course, with his winner. But watching back again, I just like to have a moment for Lauren Koscielny getting in there, putting it in there, and he got properly wiped out on his way to scoring that goal. It's like, it's, again, it's another, this is a year of the most Arsenal things ever. That's a very Koscielny goal,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've never known a guy to hurt himself as much scoring goals, and that's a testament to his bravery, his willingness to put himself in there. But he was always getting clattered. I mean, young Lauren Koscielny must have fucking run into tables and fallen off cliffs and all kinds of stuff when he was a kid. You know, he just is that natural tendency to get hurt. But again, we have to talk about your man, Yaya Sanogo, because 61 minutes into the game and Arsene Wenger took off Lucas Podolski, hugely experienced German international. We were 2-1 down, threw on Sanogo, and the element of chaos played a part. Like, he was just like a whirlwind. There were some moments he was involved in. We got the Koscielny goal. There was a really good chance, wasn't there, late on? Was it Kieran Gibbs who fired over just before the end of full time? I can't quite remember, but somebody had a really good chance to win it before extra time happened. And then we got that goal with Aaron Ramsey. There was still time for some banter fun at the end when Fabianski came out and right. The ball rolled, just like it trickled. I can still remember my heart. Like, it was one of those where I'm sitting in the stands, it's like, it just kind of stopped for that moment.
And we all know that Ramsey scored the goal, but maybe people have forgotten about the brilliant assist from Giroud,
yeah.
Like, it's a sensational back heel straight into the path, and a real kind of, I mean, Ramsey made Wembley is his home memory later on, when he was pointing to the ground like, this is my turf against them lot.
Yeah.
But it's just a real Roy of the Ramsey kind of FA Cup goal. It's a great FA Cup goal, a poke. Yeah. A brilliant runoff. I know how you feel about goalkeepers getting a finger to, you know, getting a hand to a shot. It bothers you, doesn't it? Like, it stops a rocket being a rocket. I know you've commented on that before. I feel the same about epic goals when someone pulls down the scorer when they're in full flight.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of just Ramsey's allowed to get it out. Ramsey runs, gets it out, and then falls to the turf. That's what you want your FA Cup goal to do.
Yeah.
That's what you want your FA Cup goal celebration to do. It was perfect.
None of this rugby tackling. And
none of this beforehand, just trying to get in there and like wrestling into the ground with a try running off. I don't know. I mean, I'll obviously never get to that stage, not least because I was never good enough, plus I'm 46, but I'll probably just try and punch my teammate. I'm in full flight. Let me go.
Yeah, let me go.
Let me run.
Let me go.
Let me run to my family. But yeah, classic, classic end the drought. And then there was that nice moment where the two captains lifted the trophy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Thomas Vermaelen was actually the club captain who didn't play that day, which became a recurring theme at Arsenal over the years, where the captain was injured or out of the team and didn't play. But Vermaelen and Mikel Arteta lifted the trophy together. There was the other lovely moment with Bakary Sagna after many years at the club without winning anything. And if anybody in that time deserved to win a trophy with Arsenal, it was Bakary Sagna. The consistency of his performances week in, week out, he was just a fantastic player, and I was delighted, obviously, that we won the trophy. But that moment where he's on his knees, Arsene Wenger comes over, kisses the top of his head. I think he did away with his braids after that. Just a really lovely moment. And then the celebrations across the world. There were great videos, if you remember, doing the rounds, like all these bars, people filming, and a sort of montage of bars from across the world when the goals were going in. And I remember being back in the Tollington afterwards, and it was mayhem in the best possible sense.
Yeah, it really definitely was. And interesting, just to between the semi-final and the final, just to drag it back to the league, we won all our games.
Isn't that always the way in the Premier League?
Just But I mean, I guess it goes back to what I was saying about the you know, the confidence thing. The you know, the club were buoyed by the FA Cup appearance for the first, you know, final appearance for the first time in ages, and played like it. And I guess that was one. That's definitely a hallmark of I mean, Wenger teams, but certainly this Arsene Wenger team of being real confidence players. But yeah, I wish the season could have gone on a little bit longer.
Oh, well. Well, we get to the summer. It's an interesting summer as well, isn't it, when you look at the transfer market and what we were going to do, because we brought in Mesut Ozil the summer before, and there was a lot of talk about Alexis Sanchez, but the World Cup was on in Brazil. Arsene Wenger playing volleyball, resting on the beach in that famous picture. But bringing Alexis Sanchez in from Barcelona felt really exciting. Really exciting.
Really exciting. He compared him at the time to... well, very soon after Suarez. And I mean, you mentioned Sanya there as well, because of course Sanya left that. Sanya left and was replaced by Debuchy. And I mean, just looking back through this, I was very surprised because I don't remember him getting abuse for it. But it turns out that not everyone was, you know, not very happy with him. Maybe because he went to Man City, But as you just said in your summary of him there, no one deserved success and no one worked harder during that period, or few worked harder in that period than Bakary Sané. I certainly didn't begrudge him leaving. And at the time, it looked like we'd signed someone very similar to him with Matthew Debuchy, didn't we?
Yeah.
And that summer, we also brought in Callum Chambers, David Ospina and Danny Welbeck. But yeah, Sanchez was definitely the headline signing, and he had a great first season with us. I mean, it was a season after where he really comes into his own with, you know, the kind of Ozil partnership, because I think Ozil was injured for the beginning of his time. He ended up with 24 goals in the season, 16 in the league, but he really did drag. He started dragging us through games, didn't he? And that was when I think Wenger came out with the comparison with Luis Suarez, who'd done the same for them. But speaking of Arsene Wenger, I mean, it was over this summer, wasn't it? The new contract, Andrew.
Yes, I think that happened not long after the FA Cup final. I think they certainly used the goodwill of that to announce a new contract, a 3-year contract to 2017.
And just looking back on it as well, this is what Arsene Wenger said at the time. The club has always shown faith in me, and I'm very grateful for that. We've gone through fantastic periods and also periods where we've had to stick together. I think and this is what kind of stuck with me, especially how things ended. I think I've shown some loyalty as well towards this club, and hopefully we can make some more history. I'm sure we can. And I guess that was one of the issues later on, that the loyalty, it doesn't work that way. Of course it never does, but it kind of, we were all very excited by it by the time. I mean, history does funny things with people, but you know, some people thought maybe he should have left there and then after the FA Cup final, but it did seem like a win with him signing that time, no matter how, you know, history kind of plays it out now.
It is easy to look back and think, you know what, maybe he should have. Maybe he should have gone in 2014 when, you know, he might have had more options available to him rather than becoming a FIFA guy. But you know, there was also success after that. I think we thought, if we can just get over this trophy drought, maybe Arsene can rediscover the real Arsene, if you like, and bring the title back. And there was the FA Cup in 2015. There was the league campaign in 2015-16, where, you know, we should probably have taken advantage of all the other teams being crap. But Leicester were the ones who did that. There was the FA Cup in 2017, you know, so... I know that there were things that went down in that period, but at the time, it felt like, certainly to me anyway, I can't tell anyone else how to think, but it felt like the right thing to do from the club's perspective, because he had achieved some success again. And I know people want to put the FA Cup in a kind of small drawer and leave it there like whatever. But I think it's a great trophy to win. And also, when you're going out and you're buying Alexis Sanchez in the summer, there's an intent, isn't there? It shows an intent that you're trying to build something new and something different and something that can really challenge. And those were the kind of transfers that we were looking for the club to make, not just Arsene, but for the club's purse strings to be loosened. Mesut Ozil had come in the summer before. It was going to be Sanchez. And it felt like that was going to be some kind of blueprint for the way we were going to operate in the future. But it didn't quite play out that way.
It was a super exciting to see. I don't think we'd seen a player like Alexis Sanchez. I mean, you know, we had graceful players. We had players with, you know, elan. We had, you know, small, skillful geniuses. But the industry, the hard work that Alexis Sanchez put in really kind of dragged the Emirates with him at times, you know, just like when the tempo was dropping or whatever. He had a real kind of industry about him to go alongside the, you know, the talent. He wasn't a luxury. He worked hard. You know what I mean? I mean, he had the body language that those people, you know, who gave it to Mesut Ozil. He was the complete opposite in that sense. That, you know, as talented, but he really did. It was really exciting at that time to see him come in and drag the club with him.
Yeah. Just a couple of quick things to finish. And we talked about Arsene Wenger. We talked about the contract. We talked about some of the reaction to it. But I think it's also fair to say that there was a significant undercurrent of unhappiness with Arsene and with the way that the way things have been going. And that came to a head after a game against Stoke. If you remember, there was an away game and there was an incident at the train station, and you know, I think he slipped over and got some abuse from some fans and stuff like that, which was, you know, it wasn't nice to see.
It was simmering, wasn't it? I was just looking at those fixtures, because we had a bit of a dodgy run where, do you remember, Anderlecht came back from three down to get a draw. The game, which is now known as the sort of the Jefferson Montero game, which seemed to be the beginning and the end of one of our new signings, Callum Chambers.
Poor Callum, yeah.
We'd been turned over by United. Then we'd had a bit of a fight back with Yaya Sanogo special.
He scored against Dortmund, yeah.
Against Dortmund, kind of bundled it in. Again, I looked at it again. I was hoping that he'd, you know, I wanted to look back and see, did he take it down off his shoulder? And no, he bundled it in under the keeper. But yeah, it all came to a head with that 3-2 defeat at Stoke. So it felt like it was just below the surface all the time then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that was a really ugly incident. Really annoying losing to Stoke twice in this calendar year.
Yes.
I didn't pick it for that reason. But yeah, that was kind of an unfortunate end to the year. We started at top of the league, but we kind of weren't in the races by Christmas at this point.
That was the moment as well where somebody who was hugely concerned for the welfare of Joel Campbell said, "Get out while you can, Joel. Get out while you can, mate."
It became such a, yes. There are odd things that you kind of celebrate as an Arsenal fan in this modern era. But that was a get out while you can, Joel Campbell. That was the least of the club's worries. But we did get out eventually.
Yeah.
Did we didn't finish that. We certainly didn't finish that year as the calendar year champions.
No, we didn't.
But looking back on it, there were some joyful moments. Mostly, though, Andrew, just realizing what the team, like, just what great players that we had there at the time, you know. I talked about that midfield. I thought, Giroud was in his pomp. We had some good young players coming through. We had a really exciting midfield, and I would do anything to see the likes of Rzitski and Cazorla back in an Arsenal shirt, the likes of which, you know, we haven't seen since, basically, because they were so exciting and so much in the image of the manager.
Yeah, that was the year as well that Hector Bellerin made his breakthrough because Mathieu Debuchy had been injured. There was that the kind of Poundland Ibrahimovic. What's his name?
Arnautovic.
Arnautovic, right. Exactly. He pushed
him
a
nudge over the hoardings, and he never quite recovered.
He'd only just come back from an injury he picked up against Man City. There was a pretty bad tackle, and then there was that one. We should finish 2014 on a high note, and I think we can do that when we think about a goal that Aaron Ramsey scored away to Galatasaray. Genuinely one of the sweetest strikes you will ever see. The way that ball flew into the top corner. I think if this episode is anything, it's Yaya Sanogo. There's a picture of him from behind the goal just holding his head and his hands going, oh my God, I can't believe I've seen this.
It was an absolutely sensational strike. He kind of stroked the ball. He didn't welly it, did he? He kind of stroked it. He hit it so sweetly. It gets better on every viewing, even 7 years later. You know what I mean? What was he thinking? As you say, Sanogo's face is perfect for it. And it's a real, Ramsey won us the FA Cup. I've had a really good time enjoying Aaron Ramsey through this look back. He was a player for that kind of occasion, really. A fitting way to finish this podcast. And I still love him.
Why not? Okay, well, look, we will leave it there for this one. 2014 was the year. Tayo, thanks very much for looking back on it.
Thanks, Andrew.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you very much indeed to Tayo. You can find him on Twitter at DJ Tayo, at DJ Tayo, mentioning the FA Cup final. What a weekend that was, because we launched our book that very weekend too in the Tollington. Myself and Andrew Allen wrote a book about the invincible season together, the story of Arsenal's unbeaten season, which you get free. If you sign up to Patreon, you get it free as an audiobook, and it's available to download from all the ebook places, I think for about 99p or 1.99 or something like that. Now, if you want to pick up a copy, you can sign up to Patreon at patreon.com/arsblog. Right, let's leave it there for this one, and we will catch you on the next one. Cheers, bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.